This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the People Speak Radio Show here on the BBS Network. Once again, we have a great guest for you this evening, St. John Hunt, son of the famous CIA operative, E. Howard Hunt. And as some of you may know, last year, I believe it was, January of last year, he came out and released a tape that his father had made before he died, talking about high-level CIA involvement in the JFK assassination. This was a major story, still is, a major story, and closes the gap for many that have had doubts over the years as to what exactly went on that day. This finally clinches the case. This answers the question, just exactly what did go on that fateful day in 1963. So I'll be bringing him on in just a minute. Before that, I just want to remind people, if you're wanting to call in with questions or comments, you can do so internationally by calling toll-free 877-489-6350. Any questions or comments for the guest? If you're in Canada or the United States, you can call in toll-free at 888-228-4494. Again, that's 888-228-4494. Okay, with no further ado, the hour always runs by quick on us here, so let's just jump right into our interview. I want to welcome to the show Mr. Hunt.
Thank you, Charlie. You can go ahead and call me St. John. Be a little less formal. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And I'd like to thank you for having me on your show and for continuing to allow and to promote the telling of the truth and all the different things that you and your radio show do.
And I want to thank you for coming out and, you know, honoring your father's wishes and sharing this tape with the world, because this is another major piece in the puzzle helping us to understand, you know, what's been going on behind the scenes. And never has this been more needed than now with what's been going on, you know, just in the past few days.
Yeah.
This major, not to get off on that tangent, but, you know, this major Wall Street bailout thing is just another nail in the coffin, if you will. This country is just coming apart at the seams.
It's very true. It's very true.
Yeah. And, you know, this event, along with a whole lot of other things that have gone on over the decades, really, you know, take us back to that event of 1963, JFK's assassination. In many ways, that was sort of the beginning of the end. You know, this was a man who was trying to put a wedge, you know, to stop some of the things he saw that were going on that he did not like happening. And, of course, they had to get him out of the way. But let's get into your story. When did you first become aware of, you know, your father's story? Had you known this before? Did he just suddenly spring this on you, you know, a year or two before he had passed away?
Well, I had known for many years, since probably when my father... when his name and his image became widely distributed amongst the press and the news media after his arrest and his involvement was made public from Watergate, when he was his team was arrested at the Democratic National Convention headquarters there in Washington, D.C., at the Watergate complex. He had always worked in complete anonymity before that. And all of a sudden, you know, if you're in the spy business, it's not really, you know, the best thing to have happen if your picture gets spread out all over the paper. But
sure.
That's exactly what happened, and people started noticing there was some similarities between his face, the way he looked, and these photographs that had been circulating throughout the conspiracy research theaters
sector,
that of the three tramps. And I was in Washington at the time making a telephone call from a phone booth. I don't know if any of you remember that we used to have phone booths. We don't have too many of them anymore, but
yeah.
I saw a picture on a telephone pole, actually, of two pictures of my father and then one of this kind of disheveled, dirty-looking hobo tramp, and it said CIA killed JFK. It said E. Howard Hunt was in Dallas at the time. So that was really my first induction into the accusations that my father was in or around Dallas or had been involved in the assassination. Of course, I didn't believe it at the time, but I did study those photographs pretty well. I took the poster down and I saved it. And I always had a gut feeling that that tramp looked incredibly like my father. He had a very distinctive nose and ears, and a lot of the points on the facial features matched up. So, but he always denied it. It was a little suspicious because over time, his alibis kept changing, and I always wondered why he would use his children as his alibi. He was with his kids that day, when in fact we were never called to testify to back up his story, because I don't have a clear recollection of seeing my father on the day Kennedy was killed. So there's always been a big question mark in my mind, and certainly the rest of our families as well. But he always denied it. So that was about 1972, 1973 when that started coming out, and then. Since then, had been involved in numerous court actions and lawsuits, and he'd been subpoenaed to testify before the Church Committee and the Rockefeller Commission on CIA activities since 1976, and all those kind of things where they asked him repeatedly if he was one of the tramps or if he had ever been in Dallas or what his alibi was that day. And Mark Lane actually was involved in a litigation suit where my father sued Liberty Lobby newspaper or the Spotlight newspaper for character damage because they said that he was one of the tramps. And I mean, it just went on and on. It's a stain on his name that really never fully went away, and he fought it his entire life until the very end. And 2 years before he died, he was very sick. Had been in the hospital 9 months in a hospital in Miami, Florida. And he summoned me to his bedside. I flew down. For all intent and purposes, we thought this was his last few weeks before he would pass away. But somehow he pulled through that. But during that week that I was there with him, he made it very clear to me that he had been involved in an assassination plot against President Kennedy, and that he would be giving me detailed information at later times, as soon as he recovered from that operation, he had his leg amputated. So it's just something that he kind of just sprang on me at the very end. It was really quite shocking, incredulous, actually. So that's how that happened.
So this was pretty much a shock, huh? I mean, you may have suspected it, but to actually hear him come out now
To actually have him say to me that he was, a part of a larger conspiracy that involved sort of a rogue element of CIA. There was, I had to really, backtrack a lot. I started reading up on some of the political issues that were going on in the country at the time. I, of course, was only 9 years old, so I had to sort of do a lot of backtracking to try to understand what was going on in the government, what was going on in the world. And as you said earlier, President Kennedy was a visionary, and he was going to extricate the United States from its increasing involvement in the war in Vietnam, and he had the entire military-industrial complex against him. And as I've come to realize later on, Kennedy was loved by the American public, but basically he was thought of as a danger to those in the positions of power in this country, the military and the industrial people, the Joint Chiefs of Staffs, big business and all that. So he had a lot of enemies. It was no surprise that that he was taken out, and I think that's a crucial incident. That's really the first step towards this country being
no doubt
illegally run by people whose motives are greedy and selfish and not in the interest of a true democracy.
Not at all. In fact, did your father discuss it with you, you know, personally in detail, or did he just say, you know, here's the tape and, you know?
No, we spent many hours. I had to fly back to California after my visits with him in the hospital. And in due time, he was released from the hospital. He came back to his home in Miami. And a couple of weeks after I returned, I went to my mailbox, as I usually do every day, and I found a little package in there from my father, and in it was a single cassette tape. There was no note. There was no. There was nothing except a little handwritten message from my father on the tape, to St. John Eyes Only, which is, of course, a CIA term for classified information. So I put the tape in my cassette player in my living room, and his voice came booming out of the speakers, talking about the things that he was telling me in a general way in the hospital in Miami, Florida. He was being very specific. And that's the tape that I released last year that got so much interest in the press when my father substantiates and details the people and the conspiracy to kill President Kennedy. Now, I've always made this point, and that was that that was a plot, one probably of many plots. And, of course, the way the CIA works is that they may have several tactics going on at the same time, and each party in each different mission or in each different department will not know what the other is doing. So there could have been
compartmentalized.
Yeah, compartmentalization. There could have been more than one assassination conspiracy being drawn up, and he was definitely part of one. Like I said, there could have been several going on, because I know that I found out later that there was a plan for his assassination in Tampa, Miami, Chicago,
yeah.
And it turns out it was in Dallas. So I don't know if it was his team that was ultimately responsible for the fatal assassination in Dallas, or if he, you know, how far he was involved. Unfortunately, my father passed away before he could fully tell his story to me, but I'm grateful that he was brave enough to give me what information he did.
Well, he clearly did say that he had no connection with the actual, you know, the gunshots, that he was just...
he called himself a bench warmer, and you can hear it on the tape, and that's a pretty wide term. I mean, really, what does that mean? Someone that's involved in the planning and the... Someone that's there on the sidelines, ready to be called in. I think if you take what... The information my father told me, along with the testimony of Marita Lorenz, who was questioned in the Mark Lane E. Howard Hunt trial, she testified that she met my father in a motel in Dallas a day before the assassination, that he had handed an envelope of money to Frank Sturgis, and they had driven up from New Orleans or Miami with some guns. If you take all these little things and add them all up, also I've gotten a lot of emails from people that have just been wonderful in sending me little tiny pieces. This one fellow emailed me earlier this year and said he was a contract pilot for the CIA at their station in Miami called JM Wave. And he says that he flew my father to Dallas, Texas, in November of that year. So you put all these things together, and I believe my father was most likely probably in Dallas, and I believe that his job in the assassination was to probably set up the line of fire, to probably position the shooters, because he was a sniper in the OSS, and he was very adept at pinpointing points of fire, lines of trajectory. So I think he may have been on the ground.
Coordinator type of a...
Yeah, coordinator. And
yeah.
I think he probably would have told me that had he lived longer and hadn't been under such pressure from so many people to recant his story, which he never did to me.
Did he sound to you like this was something he did, you know, reluctantly, and now he's looking back? I mean, the very fact that he told you, he must have been bothered by it.
My father was a kind of a... strange guy. Before he died, he said the only regret that he ever had in his entire life was that the Bay of Pigs invasion was not a success, and that the assassination of Fidel Castro, which he was involved in, was not a success. So here's a guy that's, you know, in his own mind, in his own world, complete patriot, you know, although patriotism is something that you can see.
Define it in many ways.
Yeah, many, many different ways. But, no, he didn't, I don't think he had any regrets. I think he actually wanted to be known as having been involved in the assassination of President Kennedy.
Like he was perhaps proud of it, or?
Like he was proud of his role in that, because
yeah.
I think he truly, truly, truly did feel in his heart and in his mind, that he was doing something for the better of his country, you know, for the safety and security of national interest.
Yeah, well, the fact that his greatest regret was the failure of the Bay of Pigs makes sense, because he probably saw, as many people did at that time, that Kennedy, you know, was the one who thwarted that whole thing. And it's true. I mean, he didn't provide air coverage, and that's why it didn't succeed, you know, as they had planned.
Right.
So, he probably saw him as an obstacle
and I think necessary
to remove him.
Right, and I think, the Kennedy assassination really did kind of grow out of from the Bay of Pigs. I mean, we had some of the same Cubans that were involved in the Brigade 2506, which my father put together, to land on the beaches. So he had a deeply emotional interest and very strong bonds with many of the Cuban. My father was regarded in his area in around Miami as somewhat of a local hero and very, very well respected in the Cuban community. So this is something that I think that he knew that he obviously couldn't talk about at any time during his life, and which is why he made it his wishes that I bring this out after his death. Now, of course, the rest of his family didn't feel the same way, and I've lost the support and love from everybody else in my family, but so be it. You know, this is important historically.
But you were respecting his own wishes.
I was respecting his own wishes, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they just didn't see it that way. And of course, his lawyer, whom I won't mention, was, I think, was his handler. In other words, I think he was put there by the Central Intelligence Agency to handle my father and to keep my father from going public with a lot of this stuff, because he was the main obstacle in getting all this stuff out. My father was excited about putting this into his last book. It came out shortly after he died, his autobiography, American Spy. None of it came out, and it was kind of couched in these sort of, well, if I had been involved, or if I had done this, then kind of like the OJ thing, you know.
Right,
but, yeah, at least he told me what he did. At least he gave me the information, handwritten memos, and I just have this, self-published this book of mine that I wrote called Bond of Secrecy, which is available for a very small fee, $5.99, on my website, www.stjohnhunt.com. And in it I have a reproduction.
You spell out Saint?
Saint, yeah, SaintJohnHunt.com. StJohnHunt.com. And for $5.99 you can download it as an ebook, and included in that I have many home family pictures of my father and at different times in his career, and I have pictures of all the people that he named as being part of the conspiracy. But in the appendix section I have every memo and every handwritten note that he wrote to me on his deathbed while I sat next to him and watched him write out this amazing story of conspiracy and his involvement and the involvement of many high-level CIA, including President Johnson and other people, some people in the CIA, Cord Meyer, and many others that were involved in this conspiracy. He named them all, and I have all the handwritten notes reproduced there, along with other handwritten notes. We had some dialogue with Kevin Costner about this when one time Kevin Costner was going to come out with the story, and it's a pretty interesting thing to look at and to read. So if anybody's interested in it, they can just download it as an ebook. It's It's pretty fascinating stuff. Gotten good reviews from a lot of people. I personally respond to all the emails that people send in about the book. If they have any questions, they can email me, and I'll respond directly. So I have an open dialogue going on with lots of different people that have questions, or that, you know, everybody seems to be very supportive, thanking me for coming out with this. So I think I've done pretty much what my father has had requested for me to do, and I feel good about that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you have every reason to be. I mean, this is something that the country needs to know. And, you know, I admire your father for wanting this information, you know, whether he thought it was a good thing or not, it doesn't matter. You know, he went against the system that wanted to suppress it, and he felt it was important for people to know. Once again, folks, that's stjohnhunt.com. Spell out the word saint, stjohnhunt.com, and you can go and get this excellent and revealing book. You know, you said something about a media fury last year. Was this, in fact, covered by the mainstream media? I mean, you know, the big networks?
No, it doesn't. It wasn't.
I didn't think so.
No, it didn't really make it. I mean, I did do an interview with Jim Morant at Inside Edition. They had me down there to their Los Angeles studios, and that was about as mainstream as it got. About a 15-minute clip on Inside Edition, and that was a good start. And then I was in negotiations with 60 Minutes. They flew one of their top producers down to San Francisco, and then I drove down there and met up with him, and we had 2 days of very intense discussions about the whole story. And he wanted to meet me personally to just to sort of get a feeling of whether I was credible or not. And he found me very credible, and I brought all the handwritten memos and other documentation that my father had given me. I brought the cassette tape so he could hear that, you know, firsthand, the original cassette, not a radio version of it or anything. But so we went through all this over a period of 2 days, and he was very impressed, and he flew back to New York and shopped it to his higher ups, his executive producers, and we had a green light for many weeks. And then it got the quash. I got a phone call from him, and he said that he was very sorry to tell me that it had been stopped at the highest levels of 60-minute news, you know, the executives in charge up there, I guess. You know, there's been a tremendous backlash from the Oliver Stone film, JFK.
Oh, yeah.
It practically blackballed Oliver Stone from doing... mainstream Hollywood films. But you know, it's important that we keep getting this out. And of course, your radio show here today is one step, one more chipping away at the big concrete block that they've put up against us. Alex Jones, of course, as you mentioned, has been instrumental in this. So I thank all the people and yourself for having the courage to talk about something which, you know, a lot of people are not going to pursue, the mainstream media. I did speak with Glenn Beck on the radio for about 10 minutes on this subject, and he was very supportive. But that's as far as it got.
Well, let them keep playing the game, because the more they suppress information like this, the more they're going to be seen for the cover-up artists that they are.
And of course, my credibility. Oh, I have to actually also credit Rolling Stone magazine for bringing out the feature article in the April 2007 issue. And which was a feature article called "The Last Confession of E. Howard Hunt."
Wow!
But
they're pretty open-minded over there, are they?
Yeah, Vincent Bugliosi has been very instrumental in my character assassination, or attempts to assassinate my character, on the radio and on television talk shows. Of course, he has a big book that's come out.
Attacked you?
Oh yeah, personally, yes.
No kidding.
No, it's crazy. I mean, he was on a show, and he was, touting his book, which he says has every last scrap of evidence that's ever been produced supporting that Oswald was the lone gunman, and that there was no involvement in the CIA or the Cuban community or in the White House. It was completely by a crazed lone gunman, and he has these two giant volumes. It's about 2,000 pages. I mean, they weigh more than a telephone book, each volume, and... So he was on a radio show and a television show, and both of the hosts asked him at these two different shows what he thought about the revelations that were just then coming out about E. Howard Hunt's son, St. John Hunt, and his his startling new information that E. Howard Hunt had confessed his role in the assassination of President Kennedy. And, of course, Vincent Bugliosi said immediately, he goes, oh, well, you can't believe anything that this guy St. John Hunt says. He's not credible. He's not a credible witness. He's an ex-drug addict, and he's, you know, his dad was crazed towards the end of his life and was just, you know, took advantage of a sick old man. And I
look,
say
Dave Morales, who was probably another one of the hobos in the pictures there, he has come out. He told his lawyer that the BBC just did a whole story on this. The FBI has admitted that the ballistic evidence doesn't match. Well, of course, everybody who's looked into this already knew that, but they've admitted
right.
it.
Yeah.
Oh, this
I mean,
is ridiculous.
It's just crazy, but, you know, Vincent gets the airtime, the radio time, you know, the big production from the big publishing houses, you know, because they're all, you know, the momentum is to still, you know, wash this thing once and for all, just making a very strong push, you know, to wash this whole conspiracy thing, obliterate it once and for all. And so he gets, you know, the big publishing deal, he gets the big radio spots, and all he can
this
say about
incredible.
Me is that I'm not credible. And I've never met Mr. Bugliosi, but I certainly have nothing disparaging to say about him.
I'm really disappointed to hear that, because he's done such a good job at, you know, exposing Bush as the criminal that he is, lying us into the Iraq war. It's just incredible that he would deny something
yeah.
like that. It's thoroughly documented. It's not even questionable.
Yeah, I have said in the past to Mr. Bugliosi in some of these other venues that I've done these radio shows, that it's not what I say that you need to find credible or not. I'm just the messenger. I'm bringing
yeah.
my father's own words on tape, his own handwritten documents, his own personal testament, and that's what you have. It's not, you don't have to judge my credibility. I could be anybody, but I'm not who's on trial here.
I'm planning on interviewing him at some future point. I'm going to have to call him on that. That's just
oh, good. Yeah. Well, let me know when that is. I'd like to
yeah.
talk to him, you know, on a we can get on the phone together and battle
that
it
would
out
be
a little
interesting.
Bit. What might be interesting, huh?
Play some wagers on who wins that argument.
Well, you know, he's had, 30 years, 40 years of law experience, and I'm just
a
lowly citizen, you know, but he has a very sharp tongue.
But you know what? It doesn't
mind.
Matter. When you get the truth on your side, it doesn't matter how much experience they have in twisting and contorting things. I mean,
well,
the truth stands on its own.
That's ultimately the truth. We all have to all have that kind of faith.
I tell you what, St. John, we have to take a short break here, but when we come back, I've got some questions that have been coming in through the type chat here that I'm logged into.
Okay.
So the people that are listening in. So, yeah, we'll take some of those questions and continue our discussion here on this fascinating topic. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back.
We used to write letters to each other a lot, and it was intimidating to talk to him sometimes because he just seemed so isolated by himself.
She started talking about how she wishes that her life was over and she wishes that she was never born.
So I knew he had depression, but I didn't know it was that far.
Said something to me about killing himself.
Tell somebody, tell an adult, counselor, parent, whatever.
It's a hard situation because you do risk making that person very angry and losing their friendship.
It would have been horrible for me if she never talked to me again, but I'd live with it because I know she'd be alive.
Definitely worth getting help, even if you think you're going to lose a friendship, because it's better to lose the friendship than the actual friend.
Suicide is one of the leading causes of death among teens. For more information, contact the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, 888-333-AFSP, or online at afsp.org.
Are you appalled that our country is spending billions on war while cutting funds for our libraries, hospitals, and schools? Are you heartsick at the suffering of the Iraqi people? Then join me, Medea Benjamin, in signing Code Pink's urgent call for peace in Iraq. Sign on today at www.womensaynotowar.org.
We teach them how to tie their shoes. They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us, but for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. The percent of overweight teenagers tripled. Obesity kills. Heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes. All are linked to obesity, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children live, where children will use them. Finding out how you can help is as easy as tying your shoes. Log on to earthshare.org now, a public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
This land is your land.
Join us on the People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact the world and make a difference. That's the People Speak every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the People Speak Radio Show here on BBS. The website for the People Speak Radio is thepeoplespeakradio.net. And again, our guest this evening is St. John Hunt, the son of E. Howard Hunt, the former CIA agent that had admitted on tape, and his son last year came out with this tape where his father admitted that he did in fact play a role, a coordination role, in the JFK assassination back in 1963. So we've been talking about that. Let me go to some of the questions that have been coming in. We're in the last half hour here. Time goes by so quick, and I don't want to let that happen, you know, and not address some of these questions. This first one is from, actually, you know what? We have a caller on the line. Let me go to him first, and then I can take some of these text questions. We got Mike Holding in California. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, thanks a lot. I had a question for St. John. St. John, I understand that your father was the inspiration for the TV series and later the film, Mission Impossible. Is there any further plans to make a story about your father in film or TV series if it hasn't been done already, and will you be called in as a consultant? Thank you so much.
Hey, Mike, how are you? What part of California are you in?
Southern.
Okay, I'm up here in Northern California. Well, that's true. My father was the inspiration for the character Ethan Hunt, and that was not he was not involved, or he was not the inspiration for the TV series Mission Impossible, but for the Tom Cruise movies when they were fishing about for a name for Tom Cruise's character to play. The writers and the producers got together, and they wanted to sort of give a nod of acknowledgement to my father, so they named him Ethan Hunt instead of Everett Hunt, which was my father's name. So there's a very close similarity, and yeah, my father thought that was he was very gracious and very grateful that they would acknowledge him in that kind of way. As far as any other film projects that are on the boards, I believe that Warner Brothers has optioned the rights to my father's autobiography, American Spy, but I've been locked out of that negotiation by my family. And let's see, would I be asked to consult? I should be, because I knew my father in his roles as a spy and a mastermind. during Watergate and the CIA and all his black ops operations and all the things that he was involved in. I knew him in that light very, very well, and we had a very deeply resonant bond together. But I doubt I will be because, as I said earlier, my family has shut me out of in any of those kinds of things. As a matter of fact, after he passed away, I was not even allowed to come to his will, a reading of his will, although I did attend his funeral. But it was right after that that they just sort of cut me out because they're against my coming out with this information that my father wanted me to. So I think it would be great if they did a movie about him. I just hope they kind of stick to the truth, and I'd be glad to be on board as a consultant in that.
Are you still there, Mike? I think he dropped. For those that didn't recognize his voice, of course, that's our producer. But, yeah, it's pretty sad, you know, when the general public turns its back on you. But when you have your own family doing it, that's very difficult to take. So, again, I have to commend you, you know, in spite of all the opposition, you know, that's unfortunately the price of standing for truth, you know.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
and gladly we'll pay it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to see that, you know. And I'm also glad to see that, you know, your love for the truth hasn't caused you to be resentful, you know, toward your father. I mean, you still love him, you know, for who he was, and you learn to look at things through his eyes and try to think, you know, what drove him to do it. And you understand that, you know, it's not that he necessarily was evil. He was just, you know, carrying out orders and, you know, people find themselves in situations where their very life might depend on it. You know, they're afraid. He could have been afraid for your life. Who knows?
Yes, he was afraid for our lives, as a matter of fact. He told me in one of our last conversations that when we were talking about my mom's death, my mom's murder, he let it slip that after she was murdered, that he was deeply and very frantically afraid for his children and for our well-being because of everything that had happened. Of course, a week after she was killed, he pled guilty to all charges and never, you know, and completely went with everything that they said. But before that, he had been blackmailing the White House, or they called it blackmail. He had evidence that was going to bring down the Nixon White House, and he and my mom had threatened them, you know, if they didn't continue helping to pay with money and the funds for the lawyers and the, you know, and the different attorneys. We had all the Cuban families, and we had the McCord and the Liddy family, and they all needed money for their lawyers, and it had been promised to them. And then there was elements under President Nixon that didn't want them to be paid. And John Dean, of course, was saying, you know, that my father should not be paid. And Nixon was going, no, Hunt, that we got to pay Hunt off because he knows too much. He's been involved in all this stuff. It goes way back. The Bay of Pigs thing, which was Nixon's way of talking about the JFK assassination. So Nixon knew what an important guy my father was and how much my father did know and wanted to pay my father off. So, yeah,
wow.
It was crazy.
Yeah, he was quite a character. And, of course, LBJ, you mentioned earlier, he was quite the individual.
Yes.
I'm sure you've heard of Barr McClellan. He wrote a whole book on he was actually Scott McClellan's father, but he used to be the one of the attorneys for LBJ. And
oh, right, right.
Yeah. Yeah, back in, I think, 2003, he came out with a book. Somebody else I want to get on the show at some point here. But Blood, Money, and Blood, Money, and Tears, I think it's called.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, yeah, he documents, you know, LBJ's role in the whole thing. I mean, he knew, you know, blow by blow what was going on. And,
oh, good, good. I'll have to pick up a copy of that book.
Yeah,
not read it.
Very good. Yeah, I read it.
Yeah, so the whole LBJ story and you know, this whole the whole LBJ angle, I should say, isn't something really that's brand new. I mean, Barr McClellan wrote about it, as you said, and LBJ's mistress, what was her name?
Yeah,
Brown, Madeline Brown.
Right, Right.
Right. She wrote a book about it, and there was a segment on a very good series called The Men Who Killed Kennedy that used to run every November on the History Channel. And,
I think they still do for the whole week. Yeah.
I think they do, but that episode is not well. The Johnson family put so much pressure on the History Channel and Discovery Channel for running that one episode that they will no longer run that particular episode.
That segment,
LBJ.
Sure. Yeah. Right.
So you know you have you have a lot of people still with invested interest in keeping this, you know, quiet.
I remember. You know, Jim Garrison, he was the district attorney of New Orleans, the only one who ever brought charges against any of the perpetrators for the Kennedy assassination. He was on the Johnny Carson show back in, I think it was 1967 or 8, and he had some pictures, some of which, you know, showed the hobos. Obviously,
oh.
One was your dad, and I think Dave Morales was another one. And as soon as he indicated to Johnny that he was going to show these pictures, he had them there in his lap. Johnny reached over and he put his hand down and he says, wait a minute. He says, the American people have the right to see this. Nope, we're not going to do that. We're not going to show that.
Wow.
He says, well, wait a minute. He says, why not? Shouldn't the American people have the right to see? He says, you know, these were people who were picked up and we've never been told what happened. You know, were they interrogated? If they were, was the record of their interrogation? They were arrested. How come nothing came out of this? So, you know, about two or three times he kept trying to put the pictures up and Carson kept putting his hand down and, so, I mean, this has been the case all the way through, you know, this media cover-up.
Yeah, and of course, Jim Garrison was ultimately ridiculed, and, you know, aside from Oliver Stone's support of what Garrison did, it's been pretty much blacklisted in the minds of the American public.
It's amazing that they can do this stuff right out in the open. And
look at how much, you know, I mean, look how much Bush Senior and Bush Junior have gotten away with. I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, it started with the JFK assassination. I mean, when Kennedy took over from Eisenhower, is that correct? Eisenhower was the last president before
Kennedy, yeah.
Before Kennedy, right. Eisenhower's final speech about the dangers of having such a large standing army and about the
military-industrial...
Yeah, he coined that phrase. Actually, there was one word that was left out of that phrase, and originally it was the military-industrial political complex.
Mm.
So he was linking all three, you know, the politicians in D.C. with the military and then the industrialists. And
right.
that was what he was trying to caution the American people. I mean, he was very plain in his final speech saying, you know, you have to be really careful now, because we have this huge military-industrial-political complex that's running our country, and it's very dangerous for our civil liberties and our democracy. And of course, Kennedy inherited his plan for the Bay of Pigs invasion. I don't entirely fault JFK for backing out. I don't think he wanted to be known as a nation, a big America, powerful nation, invading a tiny little island, you know, sovereign state. I mean,
yeah, he was furious with Alan Dulles. In fact, he fired Alan Dulles and later they
fired
him to head up the commission.
Tracy Barnes, who was my dad's boss. My dad was sent out of the country to, we moved to Madrid right after the Bay of Pigs failed, and, you know, he threatened to splinter the CIA to the winds, 1,000 pieces to the winds.
So he kind of went there to seek asylum for a while?
I think there was some. I've learned since then that he met with some people in Madrid, that there was some sort of an operation out that was exploring the idea of assassinating Generalissimo Franco, and that my father met with some Cubans in Madrid to flesh out another assassination attempt on a foreign leader. I mean, it just went on. It just goes on and on. You know.
Yeah.
But we have an election coming up, and everybody's got to get out there and vote. I don't care, you know, I have my own personal, you know, politics, and I know who I'm going to vote for, but it's important that everybody get interactive with the government, and, you know, there should be more sunshine, you know, in the government. I think this bailout thing is just insane.
Oh, it is.
It's
unbelievable.
I
have to point this out. It's amazing. Last Monday, of course, initially they voted it down. The next day, the stock market went up 500 or so points. Now that the thing got voted in, today, the first business day after the vote, it's sunk, you know, hundreds of points. I mean, they were selling this idea to us, this bailout package, as, you know, the savior of the economy. And if we don't vote it, the economy is going to go south. But the truth is, when they didn't vote it, it went north, and now that they voted it, it's going south. I mean, how dumb can people be? Why are they sitting back and letting this happen?
It's really incredulous. And of course, they added $100 billion of sweetener just to get people to vote it through.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think Glenn Beck is...
Which puts us even in more debt and devaluates the dollar. That's another reason why it's going down. Foreign investors are pulling out because they realize, hey, this is going to devaluate the American dollar even more. Why invest in that?
Yeah, I hope that we can straighten this out, but it's going to take a lot more than one presidential term. I think if we can get Obama in there, I think he needs to stick it out for two terms, and then hopefully...
Well, we definitely don't want another neocon like Bush, and that's what we're going to get with McCain. I mean, there's going to be no change whatsoever there. You know, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
More
well,
wars.
Worried,
we're going to...
I was worried just briefly, you know, in a conspiratorial manner. I was worried that, you know, well, if McCain gets voted in or gets placed in office with Palin, what's to prevent the people that are in control now from getting rid of McCain and then completely using Palin as a puppet? You know, she's got nobody watching her back. She hasn't been involved in politics long enough.
She's the perfect button. Perfect puppet,
yeah.
You know, just press this button, pull this string, and
yes, exactly.
She'll smile and dance, and
mm-hmm. and not answering questions.
Yeah. Anyway, let's go to some of the other questions we've got here. This comes from John in the Canadian Rockies, and he says, "Mr. Hunt, can you tell us the story of how you got the name Saint John?"
Well, that my mom gave me that name. My father. When I was born, my father wanted me to be called Everett Howard Hunt III, and my mom just was not going to have anything to do with that. She goes, no way, he's going to be called Howie, and I don't like the name. And she was very strong-willed and independently minded woman. So I don't know where she came up with the St. John. But she just thought that had a nice ring to it, so she said...
Was she religious, perhaps? Or?
No, not overtly. I mean, she was a Catholic, but she wasn't even big on going to church every Sunday. As a matter of fact, our family had been excommunicated because she married my father, who was a Presbyterian outside of the,
she was a heretic.
She was a heretic, and so they made a big deal, and the archdiocese there on the East Coast excommunicated our family from the Catholic religion. So, I guess that's another something else they can do.
So you're in trouble all around then.
I've just been in trouble my whole life. I can't seem to get away from it, but it was her idea, and so she thought Howard St. John Hunt just had a nice ring to it, and so she knew that she put the St. John in there that she could call me Saint John or Saint. So all my friends always call me Saint or Saint John.
Now, is your mother still alive? Or
no, you know, she died in that plane crash in 1972. She was this plane crash was she was delivering Watergate. They found over $10,000 in her purse, and she had all these canceled bank checks from the committee to reelect the president that had been laundered through a Mexican bank, and she was taking those for safekeeping to Chicago because that was what they were using to, quote-unquote, blackmail the presidency, the Nixon administration, into continuing paying the hush money for the defendants.
Oh, boy.
And so she got on that plane, and she knew she was being followed. She'd been being followed for many weeks, and she was picking up cash from the committee to reelect the president, from people in the White House. They were dropping off cash at these drop-off points or in and around Washington D.C. at bus stations and locker rooms and taped under park benches in the middle of the night. And she was very spooked, and she felt that, you know, that her life was in serious danger. And
now, was this something that your father had asked her to do? I mean, she wasn't working for the CIA herself, was she? Or?
She was a contract agent in the CIA when they met and were married. She was originally worked for Averell Harriman's office, who was part of the restructuring
oh, yeah.
of Europe. And she was contracted by the CIA. She was tracking the gold and the artworks that the Nazis had plundered from the Jews in Europe and hidden around in different places. So she was on the trail of Nazi gold and art that had been plundered. So she
wow.
was very savvy, and she was in Shanghai on the last train out when the communists took over, and she had her 32 pearl handle 32 that she showed me strapped to her thigh, you know, under her dress, and very romantic movie stuff, just, you know, straight out of Hollywood. You couldn't ask for a better story. But so she was
very familiar
with
the
intelligence.
I was saying you couldn't make this up.
Pardon me?
I was just saying you couldn't make this stuff up. This is incredible.
No, you couldn't make this stuff up. No, it's a great story. Anyways, but she was murdered. There was a bomb planted on the plane. It was triggered by, I think it's an altimeter, triggered exploding device. So when the plane reaches up a certain level, it's engaged, and then when it comes down, it's set off. Based on air pressure or something. Anyways,
now have they labeled that an accident over the years?
They did label that an accident. The NTBS, sure. Matter of fact, the day after the plane crash, Nixon appointed one of his top henchmen, a guy named Eagle Bud Crow, who was one of Nixon's top guys, to be head of the mm-hmm. NTBS, National Transportation and Safety Board, NTSB, which oversees all the investigations for domestic plane crashes. So Nixon put his top guy in control of that investigation.
I.e. covers them up, yeah.
Yeah, and there was just so many things. There was 50 FBI men on the ground 15 minutes after the plane went down. They cordoned off the entire area. They told the firemen and the police officers to stand down until they were through searching for something that they weren't going to divulge what it was. What they were looking for was that suitcase that my mom had that had all these canceled checks in it. That was the black. That's what they had against Nixon. That was forcing Nixon to continue paying this money. So she died in 1972 under those very strange circumstances.
Wow. That must not have been a very pleasant thing. But you were probably still a kid then, right?
I was 17.
Or a teenager? Or?
Yeah, 17 years old.
Yeah.
18 actually. Yeah, 72. Yeah.
Now, did you have suspicions then, or?
No, didn't have suspicions then. As a matter of fact, Rolling Stone magazine came out with an article after the plane crash written by a Chicago investigator, a guy named Sherman Skolnick, and he wrote this piece called The Watergate Plane Crash. And in it, he had broken in. He had his team break into the NTSB headquarters in Chicago and steal all the files on the crash. And after a few weeks of poring over these files, he came to the conclusion that it was a bomb, and that it was murder. And so he was trying to bring this out in the press. So Rolling Stone published his article, and then we read it. My sister and I, my sister Lisa and I, read this article, and we were just incredulous that this man, this Sherman Skolnick, was saying that my mom had been murdered in this plane crash.
Wow.
We just thought it was just a freak of chance, you know, just a freak accident. But we wrote to Rolling Stone and said, how dare you print this slanderous yellow journalism? Anyways, they sent a reporter down, a lady by the name of Julia Cameron, who later married Martin Scorsese, and she spent a week with my sister Lisa and I in our home in Potomac as we were packing everything up, and my father was in prison at the time, and we were living there alone amongst all the memories of my mother, and she came to stay with us. And That article was called Life Without Father, and that was in the 1974, I think January 74 issue of Rolling Stone with Paul McCartney on the cover.
Wow.
So, yeah.
You know, this sounds so reminiscent. I just found out tonight. I guess this story had been out for a while. I didn't know about it until just tonight, but I guess last year it first came out. But I'd always had my suspicions about Sonny Bono's death. You know, they said it was a skiing accident. He was a very experienced skier. And so I always felt that, you know, there was something fishy there. And of course, he was the governor of Colorado.
Right.
And, I just saw an article today. A former FBI agent, now that he's retired, he's come out and admitted that, I guess he's for the past 10 years, he's been looking into it. and he said that he didn't die from hitting a tree. His skull was caved in by a club.
Oh my God.
It turns out, you know, just a day or two before this accident, somebody had come to him and given him a huge file with information documenting high-level federal involvement in drug laundering, drug smuggling, and weapons sales.
Oh, wow.
And he said he was so blown away by it, he said, I'm going to make this my top priority. You know, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. And, of course, you know, a day or two later, they said he died in a skiing accident. And, you know, that same week, they had come out with one of the Kennedys, a woman. I don't remember what her name was now. But they said that she died in a skiing accident as well within, like, 2 or 3 days of his death. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, you never hear of experienced skiers hitting a tree, you know?
No.
And now all of a sudden, two of them in 1 week? And, well,
yeah.
we now know Sonny Bono was not an accident, so I don't imagine that that Kennedy was either. Of course, we know the whole Kennedy family has been targeted for a long time.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is that I went to school with some of the Kennedy children back in, probably third grade. We went to Our Lady of Victory School in Washington, and I remember the Kennedy children being dropped off in a limousine to attend the school there. I think I went to school with Caroline. I don't know if I was in any of her classes, but that just, in retrospect, that just seems like, you know, it's just such a bizarre coincidence that here, you know, I'm in the attending the same school in the same proximity as the little girl whose father was, you know,
right,
murdered by my father in a way, you know.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time, but just one more quick question I wanted to ask you. Do you have any suspicions about the death of JFK Jr., his plane crash?
You know, I don't really know much about it, and I hate to speculate on things. I don't like just to,
right,
you know, I only want to be able to comment on something that I know, but I don't have any particular feelings about that. I don't know enough about it, and I would hate
to.
Well,
I'll tell you what, I got some information. Maybe I get your email. I'll send it to you if you want to take a look at it.
Please do. Yeah, I'd be interested.
Yeah, I think you'd find it interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to thank you for coming on. It's been really interesting. I wish we had more time because there's just so much more to talk about. We didn't even have to scratch the surface.
Well, Charlie, thanks. You can have me again. I'll be glad to come on anytime you want.
You bet. Love to do it.
All right.
Thanks again.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, folks, that's it for tonight. I just want to remind you next week, got another great guest coming on. I'll be interviewing Jerry Smith. He's an author, lecturer, environmentalist. We're going to be talking about weather warfare. That's right, the technology to tamper with the weather. You know, is there something else going on with the crazy weather we're seeing around the world besides just nature freaking out on us, or is there some hidden hand behind the scenes being responsible for this? So that's next week's topic, next week's guest. Tomorrow night here on The People Speak on VBS, we're going to have a rerun of Aaron Gundy, of that interview. So you don't want to miss that if you hadn't heard it already. Okay, folks, thanks a lot for joining us, and I'll see you next week. Take care.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of the past, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.